What up, what up, what up? Welcome to another episode of 94 Feet with Coach JT. Man, please do me a favor. Leave a like, comment, subscribe to the podcast as I continue to just have some really dope people, dope associates, dope friends on the show. I take pride in having these connections with my guests, and it's been really helpful for me, and hopefully you guys are picking up on something from people I bring on. All right, today, man, I got something special for y'all as always though, but let me take my time as I read my ex-teammate's resume right here, man. So he just completed his first season as an assistant coach for the men's basketball program at Alabama State University. Also, he came to Alabama State after a stellar career in the Southwestern Athletic Conference, or we better call it the SWAC. Also, let me give you a bit about this young man's bio right here, man. After playing a year at Alcorn State, he transferred to Jackson State, where he played his final 2 years. He finished 10th in the nation in scoring during his junior season, averaging 23.5 points per game, and was named first team all SWAC and scored a season high 40. Let me say it again, a season high 40 against TSU. Declared for the draft 2006, but then came back to school again. Came back, was preseason SWAC player of the year and preseason All-American. Not done yet. During his senior season, he set a single game record for points per game, averaging 27 a game. His free throw percentage set a record for that. Attempted, he finished career as a member of the 1,000-point-plus club with 1,698 career points. Also, placing in 10th in scoring history in just 2 seasons at JSU, man. And last but not least, man, he spent a part of 3 NBA seasons with the Cleveland Cavaliers, Toronto Raptors, the Lakers, the Hornets. Man, he's been a part of the G League, just a journeyman everywhere. And I had the pleasure of playing with the gentleman 1 year, Alcorn State coach, Trey Johnson. Trey, what's up, man?
Not much, man. I like the intro, man. I had to get you to do all my intros.
Hey, bro, I've been trying to do my homework, man. And thanks for coming on. And as we know, the show, man, 94 Feet, we're going to jump right into this thing, Trey. So I know a little about your background, your bio, but for the people that may not know and listening, just sports in general, bro, what sports was on your list growing up? What was the sports that you always doing, or what were you always at growing up as a young fella?
Oh, man. So, I mean, in my household, whatever season it was, that's what my favorite sport was. You know, if it was baseball season, it was baseball, basketball, football. I was a 3-sport guy growing up. And then I kind of really honed into it a little bit more once I got into high school and I became a 2-sport athlete. Baseball was my first love. I mean, baseball in my household was what you had to do. It was no question. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. You played baseball. Basketball just happened to be another one that I fell in love with. And it was an environmental thing. You know, a lot of my friends were playing basketball. They were taking a liking to basketball. So, you know, I kind of felt more in love with that the older I got. But I mean, I was a baseball player growing up, and that's what I thought I was going to be long term.
So starting early out, and just also let us know where you're from, man. Again, I know specifically, but let's tell everybody where you're from, man, where you grew up.
Oh, man, the greatest place on earth, man. Jackson, Mississippi.
Jacktown.
It's no better.
That's what's up, man. So growing up in Jackson early on, bro, you said, again, multiple sports, Trey. People you looked up to as far as either idolizing or kind of wanting to mimic any of your sports games after. We all had them. Give me some people, famous, not famous, family members who kind of you knew, I want to do this because of this person, or I want to get better because I'm watching them.
Man, first and foremost, man, it started within my family. You know, my pops, obviously, he was my baseball coach, you know, for a very long time. My first high school season, he was my baseball coach. I still call him coach to this day. Like, I haven't called him pops probably since I was, I don't know, a little kid, you know. But definitely I looked up to my pops. You know, he was a journeyman as a baseball player. He never made it to the majors, but played about 7-8 years in the minor league system back in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, I kind of saw that desire that he still had. And in a sense, he was living vicariously through me and my brother still, but I understood it. I understand it better now. But definitely my pops, my granddad, he was an Alcornite, played football at Alcorn, played baseball at Alcorn. Looked up to him. Just a well-rounded individual. Very intelligent, was good at everything. And then, you know, you start diving into, you know, the professional athletes you looked up, I was a Scottie Pippen fan. Like, Scottie Pippen to me was the epitome of a basketball player. Mm. Was a little bit above average at everything. Could do everything. Obviously, Jordan. And then you talk about guys like, you know, when I got in college, Kobe was in his prime. And I'll never forget, man, I remember I didn't like Kobe at first. I wasn't a Kobe fan because I was a Jordan Pippen guy. Like, I wasn't a Kobe fan. And I had a conversation with my pops one day. You know, I had the little kid mindset at first. Man, I ain't trying to be like Mike. And my pops was like, well, if you can mimic the greatest to ever do it, wouldn't you do that? And from that point on, it made a whole lot of sense to me. And I was a Kobe fan from that point on, and that was blessed to be able to play with him. But, and in my head coach now, Mo Williams. I've seen Mo Williams since he was a seventh grader and been a fan, been a student of his, been one of my best friends. I mean, he was one of them guys that I saw the behind the scenes that nobody sees and wouldn't believe. But I saw it. So I've always been his fan. Guy like Justin Reed, Lindsey Hunter, Ryan Lothrop. I mean, these guys I looked up to, Brian Adams. You know, anybody that was great at their craft, I wanted to take some from them. I wanted to learn from them. So, I mean, that's just a few. And hopefully nobody gets offended if I left them off the list. But those are the guys that, you know, pop in my head and come to mind when you ask me about looking up to.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So as we know now, as coaches in our world of business and just whatever it is in general, time put in, right? Your players, my players have access to so much extra. Again, I've seen it in you outside of the court. Give me just as a youngster, though, how much time was you putting in, bro? Because
I was just having a conversation with a recruit's mom about, man, and we just going to start at college. Man, I didn't really go out. You know, it was rare if I went out. And it definitely wasn't in season. My schedule, and I don't recommend this schedule to student athletes now, but I would wake up. We would have practice when I was at Jack State at 5:30 in the morning, every morning, like clockwork. So I'm still the first guy at practice. Sometimes I beat the trainers there. I'm at practice first. I would leave practice, go to the cafeteria, eat breakfast, go back to my room, take a nap, get back up, go back to the gym. This is not a practice now. This is just me going to get some extra work in, go to the weight room, and in between all that, do my classes. So, I mean, people going out hitting the club, I'm going to go to the gym. You know, I'm going to go to the gym. You know, so, the time, I can't even count the hours. Like, you know, it was a full-time job. I knew that early on. As a junior in high school, I made the team. You know, we got Mo Williams. I'm a 6'4" power forward at the time. And I remember shooting around in our gym before practice. We would just free shoot before practice. And I just told myself in my head, I just said, I'm going to the league. To myself, in my head, it wasn't no broadcast. Let me go tell everybody. But that's the day I committed to, like, whatever it takes, whatever I got to do. I know I ain't the most talented guy on the court. Nobody that saw me playing high school said he gonna play in the NBA. You know, but I just believed in myself. I was crazy enough to believe in myself. So, yeah. You know, the time and the effort, I can't even count it.
Yeah, but again, like you said, like the Kobe, you have to be different to do that. So, where do you say, outside of watching those guys, where does that inside come from? Because I've seen it firsthand. Like I said, I noticed, I can witness, I can say you weren't going out. You wasn't doing that. I mean, you was just different regardless. But I mean, always humble about it. But it was like, you knew what you wanted to do. Where does that come from inside you, if anywhere, or if anybody's responsible?
Part of it is the fear of failure. And then part of it was just proving people wrong. You know, me, I went against the grain. Like I said, my family was a baseball family. If you didn't play baseball, something was wrong with you. So I remember my aunts, my pops, my moms. You know, I played baseball at Alcorn too. And I tore a ligament in my arm the first game I played, where I would have needed Tommy John surgery. So if people don't know about baseball, that's like tearing your ACL in basketball. Major surgery, you're automatically out for a year. So when I tore that ligament, I, at that point, decided, hey, man, I'm done with baseball. My family was like, I hope you get your degree. From a standpoint of thinking, man, you on this basketball thing, it ain't really going to work out like that. So I was just driven by showing them, like, you're wrong. I can't do this. And just the fear of failure in general. I was a sports kid. I didn't know what I was going to do outside of sports. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a backup plan. I didn't have some other job I wanted to do or some other avenue I wanted to go down. I was the little kid in school from kindergarten on up when they asked, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like I said, whatever season it was, that's what I was saying. If it was football season, I'm saying, I'm NFL player. If it was basketball season, I'm NBA player. A baseball, major league baseball player. And every time they would say, oh, well, yeah, but you got to, I just didn't have another one. I mean, that was it for me. So it was either that or I don't know what else I would be doing. So,
crazy work ethic and crazy drive to overcome that. And that's something that everybody don't overcome, though. Injuries, something like that. Let's talk prior Alcorn, though. High school. Big rival game for you. What was it?
Callaway High School. Murray and Callaway, same side of town, but completely different vibe. And it's changed so much now where Callaway is kind of the dominant powerhouse basketball in Mississippi, in Jackson especially. But when I was coming up, Murray High School was the tradition. That was excellence. That was the name on the front. People feared. And even to this day, I mean, we put more guys in the NBA than any high school, probably in the state, I know, but definitely in Jackson. I mean, you're talking about Lindsey Hunter, Ryan Lothridge, James Robinson, Colin Hollywood, Othello Harrington, Ronnie Henderson, Mo Williams, myself. I mean, nobody in the city was doing that type of guys. And you're talking about a small city and all those guys playing in the NBA. So, yeah, it was Callaway, man. They was on the same side of town, but a little ways from us, and it was hated. It was heated. It was nobody liked each other. Messed with the same girls, right. All that type of stuff.
Right, that's funny. Biggest game, man. Do you remember your biggest game there while you was there?
Our or best game? Game at Murrow.
Yeah,
we played Monte Ellis his ninth grade year. At a school that I grew up on. Now, I grew up, I hated Murrow. I was a Lanier High School fan because my pops taught at Lanier. Mm. So he taught at Lanier for 10 plus years. So my whole upbringing was Lanier High School. I went to Lanier my ninth grade year, but my pops went back to school to get his master's, to get into administration. So when he left, my brother went to Lanier my ninth and 10th grade, his ninth and 10th grade year. He's a year older than me. So my brother kind of wanted to move around because my pops was the baseball coach too. He wanted to kind of explore that. So I just rolled with him, but I hated Murray growing up. But we played Lanier my 12th grade year. Mm. And usually we didn't play them at our home sites because the crowds would be too big. We would have to play them at Jackson State or at a bigger gym. But they thought because Lanier didn't really have a big name guy that year coming into the year because Monte was a ninth grader. Nobody really knew about him. And then we were just a group of guys. Mo had just left. So they were just like, they don't really have a big name guy. Man, it was packed in there. And I had 28 points. That was my first dunk in a game. And I dunked and screamed and I couldn't even hear myself scream. And we beat them. Like that was my best high school memory of a game right there, just because it was a rivalry. It was the school I grew up loving. I'm playing for the school I grew up hating. It was just so many emotions. But that was my biggest high school game, probably.
What's up? So during your high school time, and on here, I sometimes always try to, I mean, give up some struggles, some losses. What type of adversity did you have to overcome, man? Just any time through your high school season or any time like that that left a mark on you, like, you know what, I overcame that to become who I am today.
Man, That's a great question. My senior year in high school, I think we started the season ranked 10th just by off name. Nobody knew about the guys that we had. We had 10 seniors that were just average or better, a little bit above average basketball players. No All-Americans. You know, we just came from having a McDonald's All-American. And man, we ran the gauntlet. Like we won 20 games in a row in the state. We had one loss that was out of state. We finished 28-3 in the regular season. Number one team in the state for the most of the year. A team in our district that we had just beat the week before. We played them in what we used to call a satellite game. You would play your district playoffs. Then based on how your district went, you go play this one-off game. Based on this one-off game determines on if you move on or not. We lose that one-off game. Number one team in the state, we lose that one-off game. And I remember how I felt during the game. I was so focused on, man, if we lose, it's over with. If we lose, it's over. Instead of focused on, you know, what I had been focused on from game to game, you know, winning the game, focused on the opponent. I was just thinking about, man, if we lose that game, it's over with. If we lose that game, it's over with. We end up losing the game. I didn't play good. Nobody on our team played good that game. And that helped me, though, when I got to college, whereas when I won a SWAC championship, my mindset was completely different. It taught me how to win. You know, it taught me what it meant to be a winner, what it took to be a winner. But, you know, a high school championship just kind of hit different than any other championship. And I don't care if it's a world championship. A high school championship just hit a little different. And now I'm still sick about it to this day that I don't have a state championship.
I feel that. I definitely can attest to not state, though. We lost in the section my senior year after going 32-4. Lost by 2 points, bro. Like, it's crazy. You never, that just don't go away. So after you getting through that phase, man, and going through your senior year, completing it, what's on your mind? I mean, again, as we know now, man, it's so crazy with the advertisement of verbal commitments and post pictures, man. It's just like, it's, you had a lot of letters coming in or a lot of interest, or what was going on for Trey at that point?
Oh man, zero. Like I said, I was a 6'4" power forward at that point in time. I literally, kid you not, before my senior season started, I sat down and I wrote, because at that time, emails weren't a big deal. There was no YouTube. There was no social media.
Right.
I literally wrote hundreds of schools and just basically the same emails that I get now as a coach. I was that kid, but I was sending out handwritten letters or a typed up letter, and I sent them to every school that I could think of. I mean, I'm sending them to North Carolina, LSU. I'm sending them to everybody just trying to get them to take a look at me. And it's crazy that any letter that I got was them responding to my what I sent. And I got a bunch of letters, but it wasn't off of they knew who Trey. It was them responding to me saying, hey, not interested, or hey, we're full at this time, or X, Y, and Z. So I really didn't have much. I think coming out of high school, Mississippi Valley offered me and a bunch of JUCOs. Now, one of the JUCOs was Wabash Valley, which at the time was like number one in the country. So I had first committed to Wabash Valley to go play JUCO basketball in Illinois. Because I needed to change positions. I needed to go from being a power forward to a guard. And I needed to do that in the summer's time. So I committed to them. And then my guy, rest in peace, Omar Carter, was like a big deal in high school basketball in Mississippi. Like any kid that came through there probably from 2002 on after, he had his hands on. From Monte Ellis, Isaac Wells, LaQuentin Ross, who played at Ohio State, DeVille Smith. I mean, he had his hands on them kids. And I was one of the first ones, and he kind of redirected me and sent me to Northeast Mississippi Community College, which it was a perfect setup for me. I mean, they let me be a two guard. They helped. I mean, Omar developed me before that summer was out. But by the time I hit school in August, I was a two guard. And I mean, that's all I had. So, you know, I was cool with that. That's the route I wanted to go. I was a qualifier academically, so I knew I only had to be there 1 year. And that's the route I took. And also as a baseball player, I was drafted out of high school. So I did what they call a draft and follow. Because in baseball, if you go to college, if you go to a four-year college, then you automatically can't get drafted again to your junior year. If you go to a JUCO, you can get drafted each one of those years, meaning your freshman and sophomore year. So I decided to do that to kind of, I wasn't fully into the baseball, but I wanted to do that just for my pops as well. And just kind of show like, look, I'm at least giving the effort too, but it was really more so about me developing as a basketball player.
And in baseball, you got drafted as a pitcher?
Yep.
Okay. So coming from high school, again, that talk about levels, right? We all know it's levels. Everybody in that JUCO grind different. Again, I've been there too. It's dog eat dog. What was the biggest thing for you personally? You say you had to improve on and work on outside, you know what I'm saying, to even make that next level to the JUCO from high school?
I had to prove to people that I could be a wing, a two-guard. Like I said, I played the four in high school. Now, I wasn't a back-to-the-basket four, but, you know, I shot the three well. They didn't see me handle much. You know, I had to really show them that I'm a perimeter player and I could be productive the same way I was in high school at the next level. So I averaged the same amount of points my freshman year in JUCO that I did my senior year in high school, which was like 19 points a game. But I was playing a different position. And for people to be able to see that, I think that helped me out a lot. And just kind of solidified to some people who maybe were on the fence about me coming out of high school. Now, you know, when you see a kid play at the collegiate level, because like you said, JUCO is different. Like, that's grown men. That's, hey, I ain't got no grades, but I can hoop. That's, I got in a little trouble. As you got, you might have a 22-year-old out there playing against. And me, I was a young kid. I started college at 17.
Yeah.
You know, so, it was different, but to be able to hold your own mentally and physically in JUCO, I think that built me up a lot just internally for me personally.
That's what's, yeah, I definitely, again, shout out to all the JUCO people, man. No matter what it is, they there trying to, they hungry. They hungry, man. Right. So you do 1 year there and then that 1 year, good season, successful, numbers are still there. How you end up choosing your next destination? How'd that come about?
So the Allcorn situation was funny. I don't know if you even know this story. So I was a qualifier, knew I only had to do 1 year in JUCO, wanted to only do 1 year, had a really good year. The guy Omar that I'm talking to you about. So now he's got Memphis paying attention to me. He's got these high major schools and mid major schools paying attention to me, but they're not ready to pull the trigger on me yet. They want me to go back to JUCO one more year. So I hated Allcorn growing up. It was a Jackson State. I was born and raised on Jackson State, but it was split. My pops and everybody on that side of the family went to Jackson State. Everybody on my mother's side of the family went to Allcorn. So Coach West had just got the job, and you know Coach West.
Yep.
He can sell water to a well.
Yeah.
Coach West called me. He sell me. I'm talking about sell me on Allcorn. Now, I grew up knowing, I knew everything about Allcorn. You know, I was around as a kid, all of the above. I just wasn't a fan. But he sold me. So not only that, my granddaddy got in my ear.
Yeah.
So my granddaddy got in my ear and it started feeling like an emotional thing. Like, man, they would love that. It would make them feel good.
Right.
Because my JUCO coach wanted me to come back to school. So I commit to Allcorn right after this season. My JUCO coach talking to me like, why would you do that? You know, Omar is talking to me like, man, just go back. Wait, like you're going to get something better than that. I'm feeling good. My family loving it. You know, right. Even my pops and them, they love me because it's the swag. It's right. HBCU. So I commit. This was like in April. About a month later, called Coach West back, said, Coach, I can't do it, man. I ain't going to do it, man. I'm going to come back. I'm going to come back to JUCO. I got my JUCO coach in my ear. I got a girl that I'm dating at JUCO that she ain't leaving. One of my best friends, you know, we about to be roommates the next year. He was on the team at JUCO. I'm like, Coach, I can't do it, man. I ain't gonna be able to do it. Coach, he tried to talk me out of it, but then he respected it and leave it alone. So I go through the whole summer saying, I'm going back to JUCO. I'm going back to Northeast Mississippi Community College. I kid you not, this is not made up. The day before that I'm supposed to report back to JUCO, Coach West called me out the blue. He called me, and he can sell anything.
Yeah.
He calls me, and I don't know what he said. I can't remember it to this day, but whatever he told me, I was like, all right, Coach, man, I'm going to come.
Yeah.
So the day before I was supposed to go back to school at JUCO, I decided I ain't going to go. Mm. I'm going to go to Alcorn. Of course, my college JUCO coach was sick.
Yeah.
I couldn't even face him. I didn't even want to call him. I had my pops call him. I was a kid at the time. Didn't even tell my girlfriend. We were supposed to go on a date the next day. I was supposed to get there, check in, go on a date. Didn't even tell her. I ended up just showing up at Alcorn that next day.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the rest was history. Like, that's how I got to Alcorn.
Yeah, that definitely. Yeah, I mean, it was like, yeah. And Coach West, that's what he's good at. And also, you know, he's intentional what he does, though. Like I said, his heart is always in the right place now, considering, you know what I mean, he showed me a lot, definitely mentored me a lot while I was down there off the court stuff. So that's why I learned a lot even more from him. Like, he's a different guy. You know what I'm saying? We read a lot in the Bible, all that stuff like that, and family, man, definitely. So, and then at Alcorn, Maggie, so you got to go through the family, the divided house, right? And that year, that year for you, what was the most, let's start with the hardest thing now. Let's start with the toughest thing to deal with or overcome being at Alcorn.
Oh, man. Like I tell kids all the time and people, like, every time you go up, there's an adjustment. Whether it's from high school to JUCO, JUCO to the D1 level, D1 to professional, it's an adjustment. The game is different. It's a little faster. It's a little, they're a little stronger. Everybody across the board is a little better. So for me, being at Alcorn number one and just kind of like isolated in the middle of like your own bubble, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, basketball season really don't start until November. I mean, you're doing preseason conditioning. And I remember hooping in the old gym and playing and, you know, you kind of trying to make a name for yourself and get respect and things like that. And, you know, I hung out with Fred Cole and DeAndre Jones. Like, them was my guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anybody that knows DeAndre Jones, I don't know if he's on Google, you can look him up. He is probably the most talented basketball player I've ever seen or been around in my life.
Crazy.
And he was different mentally. So I remember feeling like, man, I can't get this dude respect. Like, he don't really like me, like, at first. And so that was a tough struggle for me because I was, you know, I'm a cool guy.
Yeah.
You know, we hung out, and he was good. So, you know, I always like to kind of walk in the room, and I want to test out the biggest and baddest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was good.
The one-on-one,
it was
baby.
Like, no matter what I did, I can go in the old gym, have a great day. I couldn't get his respect at first, and I ain't understand why.
Right.
So, I mean, that was like a tough mental point for me. And then I remember talking to Fred about it. And I think Fred kind of relayed to me that he was feeling the same way about me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that was kind of the icebreaker of like, ah, okay. And then from that point on, it was like all three of us was inseparable. I mean,
yeah.
But that was like my mental struggle early on. It was the adjustment of moving up one level. Not only, I don't know if you remember, I moved up and JUCO, I didn't play any point guard. Coach West was trying to play me at the point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a learning curve, you know, like point guard is different. You know, you go from scoring to now you think, man, I can play point guard because I can dribble the ball. Nah, it's a lot more that came along with it. So I will say that year helped me learn a lot as to how to be a point guard. You know, what went with being a point guard, how important it was, how cerebral it was. Just in general, that was my mental battle that season at my sophomore year at Alcorn.
Yeah, definitely would say that. I mean, see that develop though. But yeah, when you say Dre's name, it kind of come to my memory, bro. That USM game, that dunk he had, that is probably on Google right now, where he's probably not vertical. I don't know, L shape in the air. He caught the lob or something off the rim, and it was just like, I mean, unreal. See, a dude, he wasn't too big height wise, but the athleticism Dre brought to the table was just, it was stupid. You know, the Florida boy, like it was wild, man. Definitely was wild, man. And he talked about the early mornings, right? I can't remember the trade, though. We up on the track at 5 a.m. or running through the little farm, bro. We running through the farm, riding them old dirty bikes, breaking down. Like, people really want to know what grind is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the old way, that was unforgettable. So after the time of Arkham, bro, you decided to go back home. Family, other side now has to do, I mean, so house divided again. Now goes the other way, though. But for you, was it a weight lifted off of your shoulder and kind of like in back in the comfort zone? Or what was your mental like at that point when you decided to go back home and finish out your career in your home state, home city?
It was definitely a comfort zone. It was a decision. Like, Jackson State didn't reach out to me. Obviously, you know, we didn't have a transfer portal at that point in time. I literally, you know, I loved Alcorn. And it definitely shaped me into the man that I am today. But I just didn't see the development that I wanted. I knew I wanted something different. I wanted something bigger. I picked up the phone. I just called Coach Strutt, Eric Struthers, that was assistant coach at Jackson State for a long time. I remember just picking up the phone, calling him, and just saying, "Hey, Coach, I'm coming to Jackson State, man." And he just was like, "Okay." You know, and when I got there, it felt like it was supposed to feel. You know, I was at home. You know, I knew I was comfortable. This was my environment. I knew the people. They knew me. It was just everything that I wanted. I had to sit out a year, obviously, which that made me a pro. The year I sat out made me a pro. Hmm. You know, I was able to practice every single day. And I practiced every single day like I literally was playing games.
Yep.
I didn't take it like, oh, I'm sitting out. I don't have to work this hard. I went through all the preseason conditioning. I practiced every day, all the way up until game days. I enjoyed being on the scout team. Like, I took it serious. That's the year that made me a pro, was the year that I set out, because I was able to watch the game. You know, I was at every game, other than the pre-conference road games. I was at every game, was able to watch every game, and I saw things that I probably wouldn't have understood otherwise.
Yep.
You know, I was able to dissect the game from a mental standpoint, from the sideline, and see what was working, why it was working, what wasn't working, why didn't it work, you know, things like that. So, you know, that Jackson State was just, I mean, that was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better situation.
That's what's up. And so, and as I see, like you said, the levels, right? The numbers continue to grow, man. How, again, I know Kobe fan, I believe you wore 24 too, right?
Most definitely.
So, and I'm like, okay.
I picked 24 before Kobe ever changed his number.
Oh, no, yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, that definitely was before, but I knew you wore 24, so look how it come back full circle. And then, but just that mentality, man, in the game, on the court, I know it was, I mean, I saw it visually in practice and working out, even in the game, to be that Kobe, that mama mentality, like, what gets you there before the game? Now, how do you start tuning that up, like, pregame? What goes through your mind? What are you thinking? Because I know when the lights are on, you on is there. But when the lights is off, though, you're like, I mean, you say you're that, Trey don't talk much. Trey laid back. He come. Right. Like that whistle blow up, or we getting them line, they're like, this is a big guard right here, man. This is crazy.
Man, it's just, I think it was just that competitive nature. Like, I enjoyed that. You know, I enjoyed the contact. I enjoyed the me proving to somebody that I'm better than you. Like, I enjoyed that. For whatever reason, like, I always called it crazy. Like, you know, anybody that's great at something, there's a level of craziness to them. You know, whatever that is, however that is, there's a level of craziness to them. And it was just something about being able to be dominant over another individual in a craft that you put work into. Like, being able to see the fruits of your labor. And like you said, they don't know that it was running through the woods at 5 o'clock in the morning. They don't know that you was running in the sandbox, you know, and things like that. So it was just something about that. I love to compete, and that's at anything, but especially something that I put the work into that I know I'm good at. Like, you know, you get kids all the time now as a coach, you know, they want to play these shooting games. I'm like, nah, I ain't playing no shooting game. Anybody can win a shooting game. Let's play one-on-one, because that's where I can really be challenged and challenge you and really show you that it's deeper than, you know, I think I tweeted something yesterday about, you know, I don't care how good you're looking at workout. Can you hoop? Like, does it translate? You know, it's just something about, I don't, that may be the testosterone, you know, the pride of like, man, let's see what this is, you know? So that, for me, that's what it was. It was just, I love that. I love to compete.
That's what's up. So you win the SWAC championship, brother. Just explain to me that feeling. At that moment, that clock sounds, it goes off. It's official all the way. What's on your mind? What's going through your body at that point, bro?
Oh man, don't look at my mama. That's the only thing going through my mind. That she gonna make me cry if I look at her. You know what I'm saying? but just, man, childhood dream. Like, you are, everybody watched the NCAA tournament. One shining moment, like, to be able to know now, oh man, I'm gonna be a part of that, was just, it was surreal. Like, I couldn't even just enjoy it the way, you know, I wanted to, just because you just couldn't believe it. Like, you didn't know how, I didn't even know how to celebrate. Like, I just knew that everything that I had worked for and everything that I had done wasn't gonna mean anything if I didn't have a SWAC championship, because I didn't get to go play in the NCAA tournament. Like, to me, that was the only thing that was going to solidify my career, was winning the championship. It didn't matter about the points I scored, the accolades I got. If I didn't win a SWAC championship, I knew it wasn't going to mean nothing, because at the end of the day, it was just going to be another good player that came through here that put up some numbers. So for me, I mean, it was a surreal moment, man. I loved it. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I definitely soaked it in, and I look back on it now and enjoy it way more now than I did then, just because it was a blur at that point in time.
So, again, that was 07, man. I'm back home in Cali, and I'm staying locked in, watching you that season. The numbers go crazy. Then you get to play on TV against UTEP, bro. And, you know, I mean, we've talked a little bit here and there since then, but we come, you know, saw that stuff. But I'm over here like, look, dog, this dude, I don't know what's going to happen in the end result. But I believe this dog finna have a showing. And I didn't expect the, what was that, 49?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I'm looking like, damn, I played with a killer. How was that? Were you numb the whole time or what, bro? Because, I mean, again, you're getting buckets, 20-something, but 49 against UTEP with the, I mean, what was it, the out-of-body experience or what?
Man, again, like I said, it's the crazy part. We go down to breakfast that morning, and I think at the time we play UTEP, I'm leading the country in scoring at that point in time. So we go down to breakfast. I usually don't read, like, the newspaper at that point in time. Oh, I know kids going to say, newspaper, what is that? I usually don't read the newspaper because I don't want nothing to get in my head about what somebody's saying. I don't want to get too high, too low. Somebody's reading the newspaper next to me. The headline in their sports section, because UTEP, you know, is the big deal in that town. So that newspaper, it was on the front page of the sports. It said, I peeked over there, headline said, UTEP in crosshairs on how to guard Johnson. I grabbed the paper. So let me read this. So their whole focal point is me. I said, oh, okay. So they worried about me. Changed my whole mindset. I'm like, oh, so I'm on their mind. So, which flattered me a little bit and also gave me even more confidence. So I remember before the game, I was as calm as probably ever, like listening to Tupac. Listening to Tupac, I remember that, because it was a tournament. So somebody was playing before us. And I had a chip on my shoulder because I felt like they wanted to play. UTEP scheduled us first in the tournament because they felt like easy win. That's what I'm thinking. They think it's an easy win. Okay. So I come out. I remember. I hit my first shot. All right, cool. No double teaming going on right now. I hit my second shot. I hit my third shot. Now I'm in a different zone now. Like, and our offense, people get it kind of twisted. Our offense was not catered to me. It was a read and react offense. But I knew every single person's spot. Like, I knew what the five man was supposed to be doing, what the four was supposed to be doing, what the one was supposed to be doing. So I would kind of manipulate the offense within the flow. I'm in the back pointing, talking, hey, go that way. Do this with the ball, like all of that. So the ball is just coming to me every single time. So I probably hit like my first 7-8 shots. They call a timeout. It's too late at that point in time. I knew going into the timeout, they're going to double team me coming out of the timeout. The next time I get the ball, I just shoot before the double team comes. So I end up the first half, I had 30 in the first half. And it was just, I mean, it was no stopping me at that point. And then hit the game winner in overtime. Mm. So, I mean, yeah, no, that was a different game, a different mindset. But it was, I never forget that zone right there.
Yeah, that's definitely, again, for me, just watching, man, it's great basketball overall. So it's like, no matter who it was, but to even, like, I know that cat. I'm like, hey, but that was unreal. That was crazy, bro. I was telling everybody on the West Coast, they better look out, man. You go through your run in the tournament, finish it up. Again, nowadays, everybody's, it's so many, as they say, jobs, opportunities everywhere. But for you, it was naming the draft, agent, or what process took place after that, after you finished the college career?
Man, because I'm tight with Mo Williams, and Justin Reed was another guy from Jackson, God rest his soul. They had the same agent already. It was an agency by the name of Priority Sports out of Chicago. One of their agents played at Mississippi Valley. So he kind of would touch Mississippi when it came to guys that could play in the NBA. But because Mo and Jay Reed was with him, they basically told me, like, man, this is the guy to go with. So, that was no brainer for me. I'm going with this guy. So, you know, it was a top-tier agency. They set me up in Chicago. I left school as soon as the NCAA tournament was over with. I withdrew, left school, went to Chicago, and began training. But it was just, again, another level now. I thought I worked hard. And then you go up another level, and it's like, what you were doing, you got to do that 10 times over because I'm not a lottery pick. I'm not a for sure first round guy. So now I got to do 10 times more than what I was already doing, which was already a lot. Yeah. And so that was a learning curve. And then, you know, the draft comes up. Man, I had I probably worked out for about 13 NBA teams, 14. Had some really, really good workouts. I never had a bad workout, but I got hurt toward the end of my workout. I never forget Detroit. Working out for the Pistons. Had a pretty good workout, but I got this pain in my back that I can't really describe. And I'm thinking, it made it feel like it was like a kidney thing. Like, I just got to go use the restroom. So now these workouts are happening. I might have worked out on Monday in Miami, Wednesday in Charlotte, Friday maybe in New York. Then I got to go Sunday or Monday in Utah, then to Detroit. It was just, so you ain't getting a lot of body rest in between. So I leave Detroit and I'm thinking, like, this thing gonna go away. I go from Detroit to, I go to Utah from Detroit. Man, we start the workout and I literally can't move. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even get through the first little drill, and I don't want to be the guy to be like, hey, I'm out. But they had to kind of tell me, like, hey, you know, you got to sit this one out. So I still don't want to cancel my workouts. I got a Portland workout set up 2 days after that. I can't even bent over and touched my shoe at this point in time. I get to Portland, my agents, they scrambling, finding somebody that kind of help work this thing out. I go drive like in the boonies in Portland somewhere to a guy, kind of work on me and feel a little bit better. As soon as the workout started the next day, I can't do nothing. Like, And so I had to shut it down. I had probably 4 or 5 more workouts set up. But, I mean, it was a great experience. Again, I love the competition part. So, you know, you in these workouts, it might be 3 of y'all, it might be 4 of y'all. Mm-hmm. But me, little old guy from the SWAC from Jackson State, maybe in a workout with a Orlando Tucker from Wisconsin, mm-hmm. a Mike Jones from Maryland, a Derek Byers from Vanderbilt. I want that smoke. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking for it. So I was mad that I couldn't prove myself more. But when the draft happened, I kind of knew I was a fringe second round guy. I had a really, 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 really good workout with the New Orleans Hornets at the time and the Miami Heat. Both of them had like late first round picks. So the workout was so good. Like I literally thought like I could be in the late first round. Actually, Miami actually told my agent that like, hey, cause they was picking like in the 20s. Hey man, we consider him there. But when the first round didn't happen, I wasn't really hurt. I wasn't tripping. But as the second round went, you know how they used to have like best available at the bottom mm-hmm. of the screen. My name was on there. And so it was even more like messing with you. But I didn't get picked. Mm-hmm. And that was a bad day for me. I ain't really understand why. I felt like I did everything you were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But nobody picked me. I just wanted my name called. I didn't care if it was the last man in the draft. I just wanted my name called. They don't know how much that would have meant to me. But right after that, I knew I was going to Miami for summer league. I was such in a daze by not getting picked because I didn't understand the business side of it. I didn't understand the politics. Didn't make sense to me. I thought, man, if you hoop, you're supposed to get picked. Like, if you can play, you're supposed to get picked, put in the situation. But that was the beginning of me trying to learn the business of it, politics side of it, and how to maneuver as a pro.
That's what's up. So that's a crazy process. So go summer league. Let's talk G League, your first G League call-up. To me, just my head, I'm thinking like, it's like graduation, SWAC championship all over again somewhat. Like, it's a big moment. Where was your first call up to?
It was to Cleveland. Sean Rooks, God rest his soul. He was played in the league for a while. He was my assistant coach in the G League. So my first year out, I actually went overseas first. And then I came back from overseas after like 3 or 4 months. Went to the G League, finished the year there. But I remember being there and Sean Rooks telling me at the end of the season, hey, man, you need to come back to the G League the next year. Like, he said, this thing, from my experience, at that point in time, it was a 2-year process. It don't work like it wasn't working like it worked now.
Right.
He was literally, man, you're probably not going to get caught up in the first year. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a 2-year process. They wanted to take their time because you didn't have teams that owned G League teams. It was multiple teams that was affiliated with one team. Right. So, you know, they weren't seeing you like they see you now. And he told me that. And I listened to him and I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to come back to the G League the next year. Like, I ain't gonna explore no overseas opportunities. I'm just going next year. I'm committed to coming back to the D League. I come back, man, I'm playing great. And I'm playing the point for the most part. So that's showing another side of me. And just so happened, I remember my agent hit me. And at first he was telling me, no, rewind. We have a shoot around that day for a D-League game and the Cavaliers scout is coming to the game. But my coach at the time, he was an ex-NBA player, Scott Roth. He went off on me in shoot around, said we was BSing X, Y, and Z. But he went off on me, told me to flip jerseys. You ain't starting tonight. All of it. But at the time, I'm like, what?
He already knew.
He already knew. And he tried a light of fire under me.
Okay.
A different fire.
Okay.
But I'm mad. Like, so, but he ended up pulling me to the side, having a conversation with me. let me know. And so I ended up playing great that night. And I remember I'm thinking like, all right, I played great that night. They finna call me the next day. They ain't called me for like maybe 4 or 5 days. And it was just out of the blue. My agent called me, hit me with the congratulations, you know. And I literally got on a plane, flew on the red eye from L.A. to Cleveland, got off the plane in Cleveland, went and got a physical, went to shoot around because it was a game that day. So I'm on the plane watching playbook stuff, trying to pick up on what's going to be done in the next 12 hours. And that was my first NBA, real NBA experience. Now, I went to camp before that, but I don't ever count those outside of when they paid you. And it just so happened that Mo Williams was on the Cleveland Cavaliers. So that made it a lot smoother, made it a lot easier to be with somebody that you grew up with, that you looked up to. He was having an all-star season at that point in time. So it was cool to be a part of that.
That's what's up. Shout out to Mo, man. That's a good look. How was your family's reaction, bro? How did mom and pops feel?
Oh, they was elated. I mean, they were super happy for me. They knew what I had went through, what I had committed to, the time I had put in. So I mean, they was elated. I mean, like one of my boys, when I got called up, it was like all of us got called up. I mean, one of my boys that always was with me, that was with going to gym with me, no matter what time, whenever. I flew him to Cleveland too. Like he was with me the whole time I was there. Just like I felt like I owed it to him to enjoy that too.
That's what's up. Take care of your people, man. So, another team. Let's this Lakers call. Cause during that time, it was popping in Lakers land. It was a lot going on. I mean, again, so I definitely getting following from a distance the whole way. And how does that call come about?
Man, that was, see, like, you know, people say they got it out the mud. You know, the Lakers situation was something that literally I created, not me. Like I believe in the Most High, so I know the Most High set that up. But I'm saying the Lakers was not interested in Trey Johnson at all. I go to a mini camp the summer before that. And it's a bunch of guys. And they basically just roll out the balls and just let us hoop. And I hoop. From that mini camp, they invite me to training camp. This is 2010, 2011 season. So now, mind you, in this mini camp, it's guys that are way bigger names than me. But I go into that mini camp and I hoop. Before I even leave that mini camp, I'm in the hotel. They already calling me like, hey, you invited to training camp. I bet. I come to training camp. Phil Jackson is hands down the best coach ever. It's not even close. Because Phil Jackson understands basketball from an elementary standpoint. He's not caught up into the hoopla. He's not caught up into the hype. He's not caught up into the sexiness. Can you play basketball? Can you think basketball? That was my strong point. I had a high IQ. I had a great skill set. So I go to training camp and I hoop, play well. I'm actually playing like with the guys. I'm not playing with the guys that ain't going to be on the team or that ain't going to play. I'm playing with the guys. So come down to last cut. Phil Jackson and the Lakers, Mitch Kupchak, only team ain't never lied to me. Pull me in, say, hey, look, man, we're going to have to cut you. We don't want to. We know you're an NBA player, but we over the luxury tax. Owner don't want to pay the luxury tax. We already over it. But if we trade somebody, we'll bring you back. All right, cool. I respect that. So I go back to the D-League. Dominated D-League that year. I end up getting signed by Toronto halfway through the season. I spent a month in Toronto.
I remember that.
Yep. Toronto, that situation was crazy too. Should have worked out. But anyway, the Lakers end up trading Sasha Vujicic that year. They traded him. We in the playoffs of the D-League at the time. people don't know this. The last two games of the regular season in D-League that year, I didn't play. I hurt my hamstring. I pulled my hamstring bad. Like, was scared, thought it was over with. Messed it up. My coach, my D-League coach worked with me. I said, "Coach, listen. Just put it out there that you resting your guys because we already got our seed for the D-League playoffs. X, Y, and he was on board with it. He was like, "All right, cool." Man, my hamstring was so messed up. So we played the first, they were playing best of three series at the time in the D-League playoffs. Played game one. We played against the one seed. We beat them. I played good. But at the end of that game, I re-injured my hamstring. Nobody knows it, though. Because games won, text me out the game. Cool. Now we got to go to their place, which is in Texas. Rio Grande Valley. We fly to Rio Grande Valley. We about to play game two. We go to shoot around. I come back from shoot around. I'm laying down, about to take my little pregame nap. My agent hits me. Now, me and him at the time had been talking about overseas opportunities for when the D-League season's over with, because it gets done pretty fast. You still got another month, 2 months overseas. I was about to go to Spain. So he called me, said, "Hey, man, you still want to go to Spain?" I was like, "What you talking about?" He was like, "Man, hey, you got a flight to catch tonight, man. The Lakers calling you. They signing you tonight." It was like two games left in the regular season. They was trying to get me there in time to play San Antonio that night, but the flight wasn't going to get me there in time. But I was there in time. I got to the arena. They was playing San Antonio. It was like halftime. And we left that night going to Sacramento to play the Kings for the last regular season game. So they signed me for the last regular season game and through the playoffs. And, I mean, and that was history.
Yeah, that was crazy. So, as a matter of fact, come to Sactown, how was the noise level for you, man, when you was in the building?
Oh, man, I was welcoming all of it. I played a lot that game. I actually had a good game. I had like 6 points.
Yeah.
I didn't miss a shot from the field. I mean, it was electric. And it was everything that you wanted. I mean, I got the purple and gold on. We in Sacramento, who they had some of the best fans in the world at the time. We came out, won the game. It ended up being a close game. But it was just, man, it was like, man, I'm here, you know.
Yeah.
I knew I couldn't get released at that point in time, you know, so it was just different. Like, I'm here.
Right. So, and going to the playoffs now, just you talk about Phil Jackson and yourself, for you being IQ-wise, preparation one more time, though, man, just preparation, just as far as that. I'm sure you can test this. How much of that do you take into play right now for what you do right now?
Oh, man, major. Like, I got to, like you said, levels. And you talk about an NBA regular season preparation compared to a playoff preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Night and day. Like, even just the environment, the vibe, completely different. Regular season, you play 82 games. You in this city one night and you're in this city the next night. Like, it's preparation and it's detail, but it's like, hey, man, we don't spend too much time on this because let's do our job. And bam, after that, we got to be on to the next playoffs. I got 7 games to focus on, 1 opponent. It's a whole different type of honing in. And so I saw that, like, whoa, this is a little different. Like, it ain't as much laughing. It ain't as much messing around. It ain't as much, you know, just kikiing and ha-ha. So, you know, that first round, we played the Hornets. And we had home court advantage. And they beat us in game one. Chris Paul kind of went crazy. And now, me and Chris Paul, if anybody know that history, my first year out of school, I went to camp with the Hornets. And Chris Paul just took me in. Like, I lived with him, stayed with him. Like, he took care of me. So he's literally killing us in game one on the court and turning to the bench and telling me that I better tell them about him.
Right.
And I'm like, man, come on, man. I'm the last guy on the bench. Like, Why are you doing me like that? But it's a different level when you talk about playoff preparation. And we just so happened to have some guys hurt at that time. So I actually played in game one a lot. And I played well and things of that nature. But it was just, I was loving it. I thought I had arrived. You know, you're in Staples Center. It's set up like a stage.
Crazy.
You got everybody who's anybody sitting on the first row across from you. I'm like, you know, I was loving it, man.
That's what's up. So, Kobe, the opportunity for you there, man. I mean, again, that's dream so surreal. It comes true for you. Any from any conversations you can share with us that y'all had about anything, man? Just because I know, again, you being a savant, him being a savant, what those conversations like?
Man, he was so detailed. Like, you know, I had the chance to play with Kobe and LeBron.
Right.
Man, there is nobody that I have ever seen in my life that does the work that Kobe did to play basketball. He eat, sleep, drink basketball. And don't get it twisted, like LeBron works the same way, but Kobe was just different, man. Like, I can't even explain it. You know, I wish I could have been around Mike because I always wanted to be like, man, you know, what was that like? But Kobe was all basketball. I remember in camp, Rasheed Hazard was like our player development guy. And I had to go get a physical the next day. And the physical was at a certain time. And so I walked by Rasheed and I'm like, hey, Rasheed, man, I want to work out tomorrow, man. Can we get in there at 6? He's like, yeah, cool, no problem. So I'm walking away from it like, why did he say cool, no problem? The 13, 14 guy on the team, why would he be cool working me out at 6 o'clock in the morning? Like, let's do this time. He was just like, all right, cool, no problem. So, all right, I come to the gym the next morning. All the lights off. I'm in there. I'm in the locker room. I'm putting my stuff on. In the Lakers' old facility, you would have to walk through the training room to get to the gym. So I'm walking through the training room, and, like, the door to the gym is cracked. I hear a ball bouncing. So I'm thinking it's Rasheed out there waiting on me. This is 6 o'clock in the morning. I walk in there. It's Kobe and Rasheed. And Kobe is in a full sweat. Like he been working out.
Mm-hmm.
Full sweat. And the drills that they doing at this point in time are non-offensive. It's all defensive drills.
Mm.
Like, Kobe fighting over the screen, fighting back over the screen, resetting to the nail in the middle.
It's crazy.
Like, and I'm standing on the side like, what is going on right now? Like, I'm talking about he drenched. Like, he at the end of his workout. And that's when I was like, yeah, he different. I would try to beat him to the arena all the time. Because he the first person to the arena, too, on game day. Mind you, he stays in Orange County. Like, mm-hmm. And I remember sometimes I wouldn't, but he would notice and he would, you know, be like, I see you, young fella. You know, I just always would try to pick his brain, shoot arounds. We were same position. So I'm on the so-called scout team and he guard me. Even when we just walking through, he always like thinking something. He dead serious. And I remember asking him one time, you know, man, what's more important from an offensive standpoint, shoulders or footwork? He was like, man, that's a good question. He said, probably footwork, but I mean, shoulders just as important. Because I seen him do a footwork drill within 4 cones right off the block, like in the mid-post area where he couldn't move outside of the cones and the cones were set up tight and it was all footwork stuff. Like he was just different, man. Like
technician. That's
yeah, he was a robot. I call him a robot.
That's crazy, man. You're definitely amazing person on and off the court. Go there with the Lakers. You have another stint in the league with somebody else after that, right? Goes on. But then you take it overseas, right? Eventually. I'm pretty sure it wasn't your first time out of the country, but now for professional, like long stay, How was that transition now? Because again, you got the NBA tag on your name too, though. So you got that, but then now going overseas to handle your business. How was that transition from the States to overseas?
Money was good, but overseas is different. And for me, I think, you know, looking back on it now, my goal was I want to make it to the league. Mm-hmm. And I had done that. So when it came to like being overseas, I wasn't as invested mentally. Like I was still doing the same. I was putting the same work in and things like that. But any little thing would sway me mentally. Like it would upset me. It would throw me off a little bit because a lot of these kids don't understand, man. And I hear kids say it all the time. I mean, I'm just going to go overseas. It don't work like that. Mm. Not only that, imagine you right now going to work every day at your job. And it was this April. Say you go to work every day in April, but they don't pay you. You're going to be like, hold on, man. I ain't doing that. What's up with y'all? But imagine doing that and they don't pay you for 3 months. Mm. And you physically putting your body through it. You're away from your family. You mentally putting yourself through it. Like, that's a different toll, which is why I didn't play as long as I could have played, just because I wasn't okay with that. It's a lot of American players, they cool with it. They understand it. They like, all right, man, I might not get paid for 4 months, but they gonna pay me. It don't always work like that. So I go overseas, and thankfully, most of the time I got most of my money. But, you know, I played in some places where they still owe me money to this day. Played in some places where I got all my money. It's just such a grind. It's so different. You're practicing twice a day for the whole season. It's not okay, the season started, so we limit practice now. No. You're going twice a day for the entire year. Mm. Certain countries, you're playing one game a week. So you practicing more than you playing. You know, you want to get into situations where you're playing Euro League or Euro Cup, Euro Challenge, where you're playing multiple games a week. But, you know, it's kind of the luck of the draw. But I mean, looking back on it, great experiences.
Yeah.
You know, at that time, I didn't really know. I was just angry. Like, I wanted to be in the league, felt like I should have been in the league. So I was more so just angry, like, but I still had some good success there. Italy was like probably my favorite place. Had a really good year there. Finished like fifth or sixth in the country in scoring. But our team wasn't good. Mm. And it was just such a grind. You know, when your paycheck don't come when it's supposed to come, that changes everything.
Yeah,
like,
I believe it for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's what's up.
So just learning how to deal with that. You know, I had kids ever since I started playing. I had kids. So I'm like, man, I'm missing out on my kids. Mm-hmm. Not getting paid on time. Don't know if I'm going to get paid. You know, X, Y, Z. You just started like everything was negative in my mind. Right. But, you know, I had some good experiences overseas that I wouldn't change. That definitely helped me be able to help some of the younger guys now that I'm coaching.
Yeah, for sure. So today's time, right here today, man. I see you got the Bama State going. Your boy takes the job there. He call you, you call him. How's that play out?
Oh, man, I mean, this is a real friendship. He called me before he even, like, the job was even on the radar and just told me, he just said, hey, how much would you need? I was living in Dallas at the time. My whole playing career, I pretty much lived in Dallas. And he called me and just said, hey, man, I might get a job. How much would you need, you know, to come with me? Told him the number. And he said, all right, cool. So whenever this Alabama State situation came about for him, I think he might have had the first interview. And then he called me and said, hey, I might get this job. I got a second interview coming up. So this is going to be the move. And I just was like, bet. All right, cool.
That's dope.
And so he ended up getting the job. I mean, he had to say He had to persuade me at all. Like, all right, cool. That's what we're doing. Cool.
Yep. That's how it should be.
And that was that.
Yeah, especially with the with your day ones like that, man. That's how it should be, bro. Right. Before we get out of here, just again, we talked about it. Just give me some information, some gems that these college players or pros, high school kids, anybody need to take with them, man, just to on next level or hard work, whatever you got, man. It's your time. Drop something on them that they can just hopefully take to heart, man, and stick inside.
Man, in today's day and age, I would say limit your distractions. If this game is something that you really want to do, commit to it and don't get caught up into today's environment of, man, if you're working out, work out. You don't got to post it. You don't have to broadcast it or advertise it. Put the work in because it's going to be seen when it's time to be seen. You know, I see a lot of kids that, you know, I'm one of them guys, you know, I was around. I still was playing when Instagram and Twitter became big. I just never was that guy. It didn't make sense to me. You know, again, I always say, be crazy enough to believe in yourself, but your fruit got to match the tree. Mm. You can't be saying, I'm this, I'm that, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But, man, you don't even play 3 minutes a game. That don't make sense. You know, play as much basketball as you can. That's one thing I see now is open runs don't happen that much no more. I got better through open runs, not through a skill workout with cones out there and chairs. I got better through open runs. Play basketball. I ain't saying don't do the skill workout. Do the skill workout. But it's got to translate to playing games. So that would be my advice is, man, limit the distractions. And I know it's tough, but you don't got to – everything – what they say, the revolution will not be televised. Hmm. Like, you don't have to show everybody what you're doing. If this is what you're doing it for you and you only. You don't have to broadcast it. You don't need lights for it or none of the above. When it's game time and the light's on, it's going to show.
Yes, sir. For sure. Definitely agree with that, man. Appreciate your time, man. And I got to get back to the family or other work preparing, man. Much love, man. I appreciate you, dog. You already know, man.
I appreciate you, man. I love what you're doing, man.
Oh, man, appreciate you. Like I said, you already know. And for these Cali kids listening, man, y'all never know who knows somebody. Y'all never know. You know what I'm saying? We got a one down there with you right now, Mr. Clark, trying to make it happen. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And so just keep working, man. You already know. I'm going to tap in with you, bro. I appreciate you.
Appreciate you, man.
Stay safe, bro. I'll holler.
Yes, sir.
All right.